Okay. Fine. So tonight we are, Mitzvah Hashem, moving on in the Malacha of Tzad. I had, I guess, advertised we're going to be getting into the Sugya of Tcheles today. But officially, we're just continuing on with Malacha Tzad. And then the second part of tonight's Chabura, we'll see how it plays into the contemporary issue of the modern day Tcheles discoveries. Fine. So today's topic begins with the discussion of the Shmona Shratzim. If you open up Sefer Vayikra to Parsha Shmini, so the Torah there gives us the list of the Shmona Shratzim. The Shmona Shratzim are eight creatures that have the ability to transmit Tumah when they are dead. The carcass of these Shmona Shratzim have the ability to transmit Tumah. So that's the famous Shmona Shratzim. Now, we're going to focus on one of the Shmona Shratzim, which is the Chomet. If you guys walked in, so I'm just going to make an old-time joke. And so that's the Yisod of the universe. fine. Ari Gali, you remember that one? Fine. So let's just quickly recap. So we're discussing that. Thank you. Thank you for the thumbs up. Okay. So we're discussing the Chomet. The Chomet is one of the Shmona Shratzim. Again, the Shmona Shratzim are the eight creatures that transmit Tumah. Their carcasses transmit Tumah. And one of them is the Chomet, that's listed in Parsha Shmini. And the question is, what is the identity of the Chomet? What is the Chomet? So the Gemara in Chagiga on Yud Aleph and Bet Aleph has a certain discussion of the Shmona Shratzim. And in its discussion there, so it brings up, it mentions the Chomet, and that serves as an opening for the Rishonim to now enter the scene and to discuss what is the classification of the Chomet. And we have Machlokas Rashi versus Tosfos Rid there in Chagiga on Yud Aleph and Bet Aleph. Starting with the Shita of Rashi. So Rashi there uses an old French term, which is translated as a snail. That is Rashi's, if you look up Rashi there, he uses a term which is translated as a snail. And if you're not happy with the translations, Rashi goes on to describe a small creature that has a shell that grows with it as it gets bigger. And so Rashi is clearly identifying the Chomet as a type of snail. That's the sheet of Rashi there in Chagiga on Yud Aleph and Bet Aleph. Comes along the Tosfos Rid, and he raises a halachic difficulty with Rashi's identification of the Chomet. His issue is from our Mesechta here, Mesechta Shabbos, in Perek Shmona Shratzim. Mirtz Hashem, so we're going to be finishing Perek Orig next week. And after Perek Orig, the next Perek in the Mesechta is Shmona Shratzim. We're probably going to skip it because we hit a lot of Shmona Shratzim over the last few weeks. The main sugya is there. But the reason it's called Shmona Shratzim is because the first Mishnah in the Perek discusses halachas pertaining to these eight creatures. And one of the halachas there, the Tosfos Rid uses to refute Rashi's classification of the Chomet. The first Mishnah there in Shmona Shratzim, on Kuv Zayin Amud Aleph, tells us that capturing the Shmona Shratzim is subject to Malaches Tzad. You'll violate Tzad for trapping the Shmona Shratzim. So says the Tosfos Rid like this. It comes out of this Mishnah in Shabbos that if you trap the Chomet, since the Chomet being one of the Shmona Shratzim, then the Chomet has to be subject to Malaches Tzad. Whatever creature it is, however you classify it, it must be a species that is subject to Malaches Tzad. But says the Tosfos Rid, a snail is not subject to Malaches Tzad. A snail moves so slowly, it's nitzod va'omid, it's already pre-trapped. When I trap it, it's not a significant act. Tzad by its very nature is something's running away from me, something's able to run away, and I trap it, that's Malaches Tzad. But a snail that just inches along, it's not really able to move, so that's not subject to Malaches Tzad, and so that cannot be the Chomet. The Chomet has to be subject to Tzad. A snail is not subject to Tzad. It must be something else. So that is Tosfos Rid's argument on Rashi. Now, he doesn't do us the favor to finish off telling us what the Chomet is, according to him. But thankfully, we have Rav Aryeh Kaplan. Rav Aryeh Kaplan has a Chumash, which Rav Crystal brought in for me, called The Living Torah. And in it, so he goes through the different pshatim in the Shmona Shratzim. And for the Chomet, so he gives alternative translations, which would work for the Tosfos Rid. He says that there's some mafarshim that translate, identify the Chomet as a type of lizard, which he thinks is the skink. I don't really know what it is, but I checked it up. I Wikipedia'd it. I saw a nice picture of a skink. The skink is a type of lizard. And once you're entering the department of lizards, so those already move faster, and those can be subject to Malaches Tzad. So that would be an alternative classification that could work for the sheet that Tosis read. So this is the basic machlokas that we're starting off with tonight. We have machlokas how to identify the chomet, which is based on a halachic machlokas now in Meleches Tzad, whether Tzad applies to something like a snail, something that moves slowly. If you trap it, is that subject to Meleches Tzad? Rashi is classifying the chomet as a snail, despite the fact that he knows the Mishnah in Shmoneh Shratzim. Rashi knows that trapping a chomet must be subject to Tzad. So Rashi clearly holds that trapping a slow-moving creature is subject to Meleches Tzad. Whereas the Tosfos is arguing and saying that no, Tzad doesn't apply to trapping a slow-moving creature. It only applies to things that can run away. And so therefore, he has a different classification of the chomet. Okay, Daniel, you had a question?
No, actually, I think I'm jumping a step, so I'll just...
Okay, fine, good. So you could start seeing why this is going to start heading into the chilazon discussion, but let's get there when we get there. I realized that by accident, after I put on a tie, so I wear a blue tie today. Okay, whatever. Wearing blue and white. Fine, we'll get there though. Fine. Okay, it's not Yom HaSmut either. So, okay. So now, before we start analyzing this machlokas, so Rosh Shlomo Zalman brought in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa is working with the Shita of the Tosis Red. I'm not sure why he's picking sides, but he's working with the Shita of the Tosis Red, and he brings a raya against the Shita of Rashi from a Gemara Bayas in Perika Orek. So let's just quickly discuss the raya of Shlomo Zalman against Rashi, because he actually uses this to deduce something halach lamaisa. The Gemara Bayas on Kufav Amabez brings a brisa which states the following din. The brisa says that if you trap a deer that is sick, lame, or old, a sick deer, an old deer, or a lame deer, so that's going to be putter. You're not going to be chayiv for Meleches Tzad. Why you're not chayiv for Meleches Tzad? The Gemara goes on to spell out at least by the sick deer and applies by the other ones as well. Because it's not avil revuye, it's not going to run away. A sick deer, a lame deer, they're not able to run away. And so since it can't run away, that's not subject to Meleches Tzad. It's essentially pre-trapped, as the Mefarshim say. So when I trap it, I'm not doing something significant. That's not subject to Meleches Tzad. So Shlomo Zalman says, we have an explicit Gemara saying the Shita of the Tosis Rit, that Tzad doesn't apply to a slow-moving creature. If the creature has some kind of context where it can't run away from you naturally or due to some circumstance, if you then trap it, that's not subject to Meleches Tzad. And so it must be that there is no Tzad when it comes to a snail. That's the basic raya of Shlomo Zalman. And then he just makes one more small point, which is where he's going to bring out a point to Halach LaMaisa. He makes the following observation. He says that if you take a careful look, though, at this brisa on Kovav Amabez, so the lashon of the brisa is potter, that trapping this deer that's sick on Shabbos is potter. And as we pointed out last week, the word potter in Hilchos Shabbos typically means potter aval aser, that although it's not going to be chayv midaraisa, there's still going to be an issur derabanan for trapping this type of a deer. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, though, that although there is an issur derabanan when it comes to trapping a deer, that's not going to apply when it comes to trapping a snail. A snail not only will be mutter midaraisa, it'll be mutter midarabanan. What's the distinction? So he says like this, that when it comes to a deer, since a healthy deer in its normal state is subject to tzad midaraisa, so Chazal had to make sure you don't come to violate the deraisa by prohibiting midiravan and trapping a sick deer. If you're allowed to trap a sick deer, you might come to trap a healthy deer. And so to prevent the deraisa, Chazal sat down and issued deraban. When it comes to a snail, even in its healthy state and its natural state, can never be subject to tzad midaraisa. There's no reason for Chazal to set down an issued derabanan. And so therefore, tzad will be perfectly mutter lehachila when it comes to a snail. So that's the distinction of Rosh Shlomo Zalman. His raya to the Tosfos Rid from this Gemara Kofavam Abayis, and his distinction that although the Gemara there is telling us that there's no chiyav deraisa, there's an issur derabanan by a deer, but by a snail it's perfectly mutter lechatchila. So just to spell out the halach lamaisa before we take questions. So halach lamaisa, Rosh Shlomo Zalman says like this. He passes like this la'alacha that Meleches Tzad does not apply to any naturally slow moving creature. Shmir Shabbos Kilchos brings us down the halacha that tzad does not apply to ants or tortoises, anything that naturally moves slowly. I saw Rabbi Riviat already gets into what type of ant it is. Some ants move fast, some don't move fast. Okay, I don't know. Rish obviously says it's mutter to trap ants and tortoises. So, okay, so you want to say it's machlokas? I don't know about the details there. You can figure out how fast is called fast. But that's just an interesting halach lamaisa. So those are the basic facts in today's sugya, machlokas Rashi versus Tosfos Rid on trapping slow-moving creatures, and Shlomo Zalman's raya to the Tosfos Rid from the Gemara on Kufav Amabez. Yeah, Arye.
Why
do you want to
argue that?
Okay, 100%. So Arya Goldman is asking 100% that Kubana argued that there should be an issur derabanan on a snail, just because it's true a snail itself can never have an issur deraisa, but if I trap a snail, I might come to trap a deer. So I think that's a very fair point. I think there's room to argue that. Shlomo Zalman himself, he's making a distinction. I guess he wants to be mater ants, but it's a fair point. Yeah, Dov. Okay, we're about to get, that's exactly where we're going right now, 100%. So let's. Okay, good. So Dov just said the whole Hesber in this machlokas. We're gonna get there in a second. It's exactly what he says. And the Shabbos home. Fine. So let's just any other questions before we continue? Okay. Fine. Okay, so we have two issues to analyze now. Issue one is what's the Hesber in this machlokas, whether the tzad applies to a snail. And issue two is to resolve this kasha and Rashi from the Gemara on Kuvav Omabes. So let's start with issue number one, the Hesber and this Machlokas, should there be an issue of Tzad or not when it comes to trapping a snail? So Rasim Chalbinim Cohen in the Shabbos home, in the footnote there, says the Hesber that Dov just wanted to say. So let's just flesh out what Dov was saying. Over the last few weeks, so we've had this ongoing Chakira as to what's the fundamental Yisod of Melaches Tzad, what's the productive accomplishment when you trap something. So let's go over the Chakira again and show how he uses it to explain this Machlokas. So the Chakira goes like this. What's the accomplishment of trapping a creature? So two possibilities. Possibility number one is that the Yisod Melaches Tzad is about deprivation of freedom, that when you trap a creature, you're depriving it of its freedom of movement. Shlilas Hacheres, as Dov put it. That's the way the Achronim say it. And so that's possibility number one. Maybe that's the accomplishment of Melaches Tzad, taking away its mobility, its ability to move. The second possibility that we had was that maybe the Yisod of Tzad is about being machnes into your Rishus, taking a creature under your control. When the creature can run around, it's not accessible, it's not attainable. When you trap it, so now you can access it, now you can do what you want with it, you can control it. So maybe that's the Yisod of Melaches Tzad, bringing a creature, transitioning it from not being under your control to now being under your control. So that's the basic Chakir we have once again. Is the Yisod of Tzad deprivation of freedom, or is the Yisod of Tzad being machnes l'rishos, so transitioning a creature to be under your control? So Rasim Chalbinim Cohen, he says like this. He says that if you go with the first Tzad in the Chakira, if Tzad is about deprivation of freedom, so what would we say about a snail, a naturally slow-moving creature? When I trap it, am I depriving it of its freedom of movement? I certainly am, you know, especially we live with equal rights here. Okay, it moves a little bit slower than other people, but slow and steady wins the race. If the hare is mevatel enough, so that not only will the tortoise beat the hare, the snail can also beat the hare. You know, I'm saying it moves, it inches along. When I trap the snail, I'm taking away its freedom of movement. Why wouldn't that be subject to Melaches Tzad? I think that's what Dov was pointing out, that if you go with the first Tzad in the Chakir, there's no reason why there would not be Tzeda on a snail. And so this is how he explains the Shita of Rashi, that the Rashi is going to hold that Tzad is about deprivation of freedom, and so Tzad would certainly apply. Who cares if it's moving slowly? When I stop it, now it can't move at all, and so that should be a problem of Melaches Tzad. On the other hand, moving over to the second Tzad in the Chakira, if the Yisod of Tzad is about bringing a creature under your control, so now he gives the following argument. He says, now we can understand the Shita of the Tosos Rit. Because when you have a slow-moving creature, even before I technically trap it, I can attain it, I can acquire it. It's in a certain sense under my control already. It's true when you trap it, so you're making it even easier. Now it can't even run away in 5 days. But Lamaisa, even before you trap it, when I'm standing right next to it, I can grab it, I can take it, I can do what I want with it. And so in a very large way, it's still under my control, even before I trap it. When I then trap it, I'm not transitioning something from totally free to under my control. You can hear why there would not be an issue of tzad in this situation. So this is his explanation for the Shita of the Tosas Rid. Tosas Rid says that there's no tzad by a slow-moving creature because the yisod is transitioning a creature to be under your control. And even before the snail is trapped, it's still very usable, attainable, acquirable, and so it shouldn't be subject to melaches tzad. So that's issue number one, the Hesber in this machlokes. I'm just going to order Ben. Nachma, you're asking which side? Yes. Well, this is called Ben is asking, is this called Mechusar Tzeda when I trap a snail? So the answer is yeah. Right now, the snail, it can inch its way away. And when I trap it, I'm taking away that capability. You're asking Shchiya Achas? You're asking like Shchiya Achas? So Shchiya Achas is just defining a certain area of space. I don't want to get too involved to complicate people, but it's defining a certain area of space for... this is just... okay, it's a fair question. We'll discuss it after. So...
if you were to take this snail and now put it into a box, how is that not an issue of a personal issue?
Okay, Dov is asking, if I put a snail into a box, why is not bringing it into my control? So just appreciate the fact that Tosfot is saying that there is no tzad here, so we have to just explain him. So you could explain that although it might be more under my control now that it's in a box, but Lamaisa beforehand, to a certain degree, it was already under my control. I could take it, I can grab it, I can spill lighter fluid on it, I can do what I want with it, not to recommend Chas Shalom to, you know, to Tzar Bala Chaim. Right. Oh, exactly. Same thing with an old deer. That's Rishon Zalman's right. He says that with an old deer, it's the same thing as a snail. So that's Rishon Zalman's right. I just want to make sure we can get to the Tchela stuff. So let's just fine. Yona, you have a question?
Yeah, it's along the same line. Though. Basically, you're going to say that even if you technically could like have some sort of control over it now, but if you leave it, it will eventually get away. So it's not really in your control. You put a box over it, you're guaranteeing.
Okay, so Yona's again highlighting the fact that when I trap a snail, I am bringing it more under my control. So I will just tell you that I have spoken to Simcha Menkon in person, and I recommend calling him. I've asked him shilas before. I didn't ask him this one, but I have asked him shilas. Let me just move on a little bit. Yeah. Yes. Rashi is saying. Okay. Wow. Okay. So that's next week's discussion. Okay. So Eitan is bringing up the issue of b'mino nitzod or not. Is it b'mino nitzod? So the chomet, the shmona shvatzim are b'mino nitzod. That's a fantastic point. The what? No. So tell that to the tchelas people. that's going to be a lot of mice in a second. Whatever. It's just to repeat his question. His question was, is it b'mino nitzod, which has been next week's discussion? So the answer is the first mission of shmona shvatzim says that the chomet, whatever it is b'mino nitzod. So the shmona shvatzim are b'mino nitzod. If you want to bring that as a tain on Rashi, so it's a fair point. But let's just, that's a very good point. Okay, so let's just, okay, so what Yonah is asking, what does b'mino nitzod mean? It means, is this a creature that's typically trapped? No one traps flies. Like, who wants to acquire flies? But, you know, let's say something for its leather, let's say, is trapped for its leather. So that's typically trapped. Okay, fine. So let's go on now to the second issue. The second issue is, so now how do we resolve Rishon Zalman's kasha on the on Rashi? Rishon Zalman is asking from Rashi that we see that trapping the slow moving deer, a deer that's lame, that can only inch along, a deer that's old, and again, it can only inch along. So that is going to be pater from tzad. So how can you tell me that trapping a snail is chayav for tzeda when a deer is pater? That lechor, they're the same thing. They both can inch along, and we see a deer is pater. So a snail should also be pater. That was the raya against Rashi. So I saw there Nissen Kaplan in his sefer wants to give the following resolution. I know this is going to spark some questions, but you know it's a subtle split. But again, we have to just appreciate the fact that there's a strong kasha on Rashi. So he says like this. He says that al korchuk we need to say that Rashi is going to distinguish between a sick deer and anyone trying to be mechavin. What the chiluk would be between a deer that wants to get the chiluk, that was trying to push me along. All
right.
Are you saying that a deer can't move at all, but a snail can inch along?
I mean, the deer can barely. It can't go anywhere.
Well, I mean, so we're going to make the assumption that the deer can still inch along. Let's assume, you know, an old deer, it can't run fast, but let's assume that it can hobble. It go faster than a snail. Ben, what do you want to say? Good. Okay, that's exactly what the Kaplan said. So Ben was just mechavin to the chiluk. So he says like this, that when it comes to a deer, a regular, normal, healthy deer, it can run, you know, 30 miles an hour, whatever the statistic is. You could check it up online right now, but it runs very fast. So when you have a deer now that became lame and can hobble along, relative to what it's used to, this is called losing its freedom. Relative to being able to run extremely quickly, when it's now crippled and can hobble along, that's called already being deprived of its freedom. If you'd ask him, you know, how are you doing? So he'd say, I'm not doing so well. You know, I've seen better days. He's relative to what he's used to. That's not called freedom. So therefore, when I then trap it, it's not called depriving it of its freedom. Its freedom has already been deprived of. On the other hand, when you come to a snail, so a healthy, normal snail inches along. This is its freedom. This is its knowledge of the speed limit. The speed limit is, 0.5 miles an hour, and he's perfectly happy. When you then trap the snail, you're depriving it of that freedom that it knows. And so that should be a problem of melaches tzad. So that's the chilek that he makes. When it comes to a deer, relative to what it's used to, it moves very fast. When it became crippled, that's called losing its freedom already. Yeah, it can technically inch along, but relative to what it's used to, it's called having lost its freedom. So when I then trap it, I'm not depriving it of its freedom. When it comes to a snail, relative to what it's used to, a snail is able to hobble. It moves normally at this pace in a normal state. So when I trap it, that's called depriving it of its freedom. Fine. So with that, we've concluded the basic facts in today's sugya. So we have our machlokas Rashi and Tosfos Rid how to classify the chomet, which came down to a halachic machlokas as to what is the gather of melachas tzad. Did the tzad apply to a naturally slow-moving creature or not? Rashi versus Tosfos Rid, which Dov and our simple Benim Kohen were saying is telling a chakira. Yona and others don't like it. So, okay, fine. And issue two was how to defend Rashi against Shlomo Zalman's raya, Shlomo Zalman's makel on trapping ants and tortoises based on this raya. And so what's the... How do we defend Rashi against the Raya from the deer? So we make this distinction, which Ben pointed out, between a deer, which is naturally moves fast and became circumstantially slowed down, as opposed to a snail, which always naturally moves slowly. Fine. Any last questions before we get into this again? Okay, so Gavriel is not liking Ben's answer. Which is a fair point. He's saying, what's the chilek? So again, just to appreciate we're trying to defend Rashi. So the question, is a good question. We're trying to say that a deer, since a deer normally moves 40 miles an hour, when it can now, it's now lame or it's old and it can only move 1 mile an hour, it's already called having lost its freedom. But since relative to what it's used to, it can't do what it usually does, it feels like it's lost its freedom. When I trap it, it's not significant. As opposed to a snail, it naturally moves 0.5 miles an hour. So when I trap it, it's called taking away its freedom. That this is its state of freedom. So it's a fair question. It's a hard answer, but the horror has to be said. Ari, do you have any last questions? Or? Okay, fine. The question's well taken. It's a good Shakavataria. Fine. Okay, so this is now going to impact on the sugya of Tchela. So let's spend the next 20 something minutes. The rest of tonight's chibur going through the sugya of Tchela. So let's start from the beginning and just go through the history because it is somewhat relevant to the current discussion. So as we know, there's a mitzvah deraisa to put tchelas onto our tzitzis, and tchelas is presumably a blue dye that has to be created by the chilazon. You can't just use any blue dye. It has to be a blue dye that comes from the chilazon. And we also know that unfortunately chilazon was lost many years ago. And so we lost the ability to produce tchelas and to perform this mitzvah. When was the chilazon lost? So we don't necessarily know the exact calendar year, but what we do know is that the Gemara Menachos describes the fact that very late the Amoraim, extremely early Savaraim, who made it into the Gemara, were still using tchelas. And even more importantly, the Gemara nowhere mentions the fact that we lost the chilazon. It's such a major catastrophe would have happened before the Chasim is a Talmud, so we would expect that to make the cut. There are a lot of other things that don't seem to be as important as the fact that we lost the Chilazon and the halachic implications of that. So the fact that it didn't make the cut indicates quite strongly that it took place after the Chasim is a Talmud. On the other hand, so although clearly the Chilazon was lost after the Chasim is a Talmud, but we already have Midrashim that spell out that we lost the Chilazon. The Medrash Tanchuma and the Medrash Rabba both spell out on Parsha Shlach a few weeks ago that we lost the chilazon was nignas, and therefore nowadays we have to wear white, we can't wear the blue. So since then we've been without the chilazon for 1,000+ years, we've been unable to produce the tchelas. Now in 1887, so the Radzina Rebbe took it upon himself to learn up the sugya of identifying the chilazon and to see if we can figure out what is the chilazon, and he wrote a series of sfarim. His first sefer was dedicated to proving that the chilazon is still chai v'kayim, it could still be relocated and re-identified. And he goes through all the different mamari chazal on the chila zone to, you know, spell out all the simonim, all the characteristics of what the chila zone should be and what it should look like. And after he published the sefer, so he put his money where his mouth was, and he traveled to Naples in Italy to an aquarium to figure out if he can identify the chila zone. And he came to the conclusion that the chila zone is the cuttlefish. The cuttlefish is a cousin, it's an associate with the squid and with the octopus, and it has a black blood, but he figured out that if you process it in a certain way, so you can turn it into a blue dye, and he came to the conclusion that the cuttlefish is the chila zone, and he started producing chelas with the cuttlefish. He spread his shita, and the gedolim didn't really accept it. It was met with skepticism amongst the gedolim. Fine, so that was at that tkufa. In about 1913, so Rav Yitzchak Isaac Herzog, not yet the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, he decided to, I guess, publish a doctorate on this issue of identifying the chila zone. And in this major piece, so as you can appreciate, the first part of the piece was to assess the validity of the Rezinut Tchelos. Rezinut Tchelos was the one that was already, you know, presented. So he starts off the piece assessing the validity of the Rezinut Tchelos. So Rav Herzog, he did extensive chemical tests on the Rezina Rebbe's tchelos. He contacted his son to figure out the process by how the Rezina Rebbe produced the tchelos. The Rebbe himself died in like 1891 or so. And Rav Herzog contacted his son to figure out how he did it exactly. And he came to the conclusion through chemical experimentation that the blue dye didn't actually come from the blood of the cuttlefish. To process the dye, so there were other clear chemicals that were added into the mixture. So as you would certainly have assumed, when you put clear chemicals into a black blood, you would think that the clear chemicals are bringing out the innate blue in the black blood. That's what the Rezina Rebbe had assumed, quite rightfully so. But based on experimentation, he was able to figure out that the dye actually came from one of the clear chemicals that were introduced into the mix. And the black blood of the cuttlefish was just playing a peripheral role that could be substituted with ox blood. So that basically disproved the Rezina Rebbe's tchelas. It's pretty fair to assume that the chila zone should be, the blood of the chila zone should be producing the blue, shouldn't be playing a peripheral role that could be substituted by ox blood. And so with that, the Rezina Rebbe's tchelas was respectfully put aside. But he still, Rezina Rebbe certainly did a very big contribution to the whole tchelas discussion. His svarim are very authoritative on the sugya, and he brought back this, you know, to life, the ability to, you know, this drive to re-identify the chila zone. So after Rav Herzog rejected the Rezina Rebbe's tchelas, so now he takes upon himself to figure out, so what then is the chila zone? He speculates that maybe the chila zone is the Murex trunculus, which is a type of snail. He says, maybe it's a snail, maybe it's the Murex trunculus, but he raises a few issues with it. And his major problem is that the Murex doesn't produce a blue dye, it produces a purple dye. The tchelas needs to be blue, it can't be purple. So he knocked off the Murex as being the chila zone. He goes on to suggest one or two other options, but he has problems with that as well. And so he leaves off with the Tzarech Iyun. So that was Rav Herzog's contribution to the chila zone development. He knocks out the Rezina Rebbe's tchelas respectfully, and he makes some suggestions that maybe it's a snail, but it can't be the Murex because that's a purple dye. Tzarech Iyun, what the chila zone is. Fine. So in the beginning of the 1980s, there was a scientist who was doing some kind of experiment or sometime observation with the Murex, this Murex secretion. And he realized that although the dye of the Murex is purple, so on a cloudy day, it looked more purple. On a sunny day, it looked bluer. So that was the observation that he made. So they did some scientific experimentation. And he realized that if you subject the secretion of the Murex to ultraviolet light while you're processing the dye, it turns into an unadulterated indigo, a pure blue, mamish pure blue. So this now sparks the new movement, which slowly developed into the new movement that the Murex is the chila zone. We have this Murex, which it's a snail in the Mediterranean that produces this secretion that during the processing, if you know how to process it correctly, produces a blue dye, an unadulterated, chemically identical as indigo. It's a nice blue. And so, you know, scholars in Talmidei Chacham have looked into it, and they've come to the conclusion, you know, some try to argue that the Murex is the chila zone, and that is the current tchelas that exists nowadays. Anyone who's wearing tchelas right now is wearing tzitzis that are dyed blue from the Murex trunculus. Are you have a question? Okay, so Ari Goldman is pointing out that the breast lovers wear the Redzina Tcheles. So that's why, you know, maybe there's a machlokes here about maybe you could play more a peripheral role, or maybe the chemical machlokes. So I, as everyone knows, my goal here is not to to pick sides. It's just to clarify where everyone's coming from. So thank you for the insight. We love the breast lovers also, certainly. Especially that Nachman song. It's this beautiful song. okay. Okay, so now the question becomes, fine, so that was all the history. And so the question becomes, is the Murex the chilazon? Is it not the chilazon? And again, I'm not here to pick sides, just want to emphasize, you know, what's related to our sugya. So the two major issues that have to be addressed in assessing the validity of the Murex. So let's start with issue number one. The first and main issue in assessing the validity of the Murex is figuring out if it squares up with all of Chazal's simanim for the chilazon. Chazal, in many places, give us the different characteristics and qualities of the chilazon. And so the question becomes whether the Murex lines up with those Chazalim. And that's the major debate between the pro and con chilas camps, you know, whether we feel that the Murex lines up or whether it doesn't line up with all the Chazalim. Now, in the context of that, so obviously we can't go through, you know, more than one of them, but one of the battlefronts is our sugya tonight. So that's what we're going to discuss right now. So we're going to go through one chazal and just point out one battlefront on the Murex debate. The issue is as follows. As we pointed out a few weeks ago, what's the makor for the malach of tzad in the Mishkan? Tosin Dav Taridal tells us the trapping of the chilazon. The fact that they trapped the chilazon was the makor for tzad in the Mishkan, which means that the chilazon must be subject to malaches tzad. The chilazon has to be a species which is subject to malaches tzad. And the Gemara spells that explicitly on Ayin Hayim and Aleph. Gemara Ayin Hayim and Aleph brings a Tosafta which says that trapping the chilazon violates malaches tzad. So based on that, the question we have to ask ourselves is, so can the chilazon be a snail? Is trapping a snail subject to malaches tzad? Well, those of us who are in the sugya understand now that this is a machlokes shon between Rashi versus Tosas Rid. Rashi says that a snail is subject to malaches tzad, whereas the Tosas Rid says that a snail is not subject to malaches tzad. So Rav Moshe Heinemann is quoted as saying that the murex cannot be the chilazon, because the chilazon can't be a snail, because the shita Tosas Rid is that a snail is not subject to malaches tzad. The chilazon has to be subject to tzad. The murex is not subject to malaches tzad. And so therefore, as a snail, according to Tosas Rid, and that's how Rosh Hashanah paskins, so the murex cannot be the chilazon. I'm not recommending anyone to cut their tchelas right now or to go diet after tonight's discussion. Don't worry, we're going to end off very equal-footed. But that is the tana of Moshe Heinemann. Now, what do the what does the pro tchelas camp respond to Moshe Heinemann? What's the response to Moshe Heinemann? So they have two responses. Response number one is the shita of Rashi. Rashi shita is that tzad is shayach when it comes to a snail. There are many Rishonim that there is tzad when it comes to these slow-moving creatures. And so according to them, the murex certainly could be subject to malaches tzad, and it could be the chilazon. So that is response number one, that based on the shita of Rashi, there could be tzad when it comes to the murex. And then they bring up a second argument, which is to say like this, that it's true that when the murex is above ground, it's a creature that lives in the sea, but it comes onto the sand. When it's above ground, so maybe it shouldn't be subject to malaches tzad. But the way the murex is captured underwater is with nets. They're using nets to capture the murex underwater. And so they want to argue that since they need to, you know, use devices to capture it, the Sfarah of the Tosas Rid is not going to apply. What was the Sfarah of the Tosas Rid? That it's needs of omit. It's already pre-trapped. The snail is right here. I can take it. I can grab it. It's pre-trapped. So they want to argue that if I need to start implementing devices like a net in order to capture underwater, so in that context, it would be subject to malaches tzad because it's not called pre-trapped, and therefore it would be subject to malaches tzad. So that's all issue one. As I'm putting it, in terms of the murex debate, again, this is just a tidbit of the discussion, but the first major issue is assessing whether it squares up with all the Mamari Chazal. And this is just a taste of the back and forth, but it's Nogea Arsugya of how, you know, tzad plays out is one example of the different Chazalim in assessing the validity of the murex. Any really quick questions, guys? I just want to make sure we have to finish. Yeah, Ethan. Yeah, the murex is a snail. It's a water snail. Mm-hmm. So Eitan's pointing out that we have different species of snail, and even the Rashi said that there, even Tosrid said there's no tzad by a certain type of snail, but maybe a different type of snail could have tzad. So this is all the pro Tchelis camp. Okay, fine. A lot of us are wearing a tzitzis in tonight, you know? we'll make that next week's share, tzitzis out or in, you know? Fine. Okay, so issue number two, I just want to finish off. Issue number two is like this. There's a second major overarching issue which needs to be addressed, and this is going to lead the department of Molechai Tzad, but it's Geshmak stuff also. A few weeks ago, Parsha Shlach, I asked Rav Soloveitchik if I can ask him Parsha Shavua questions. So he didn't know what he was in for. it was an epic discussion. So let me share some of the insights right now. So issue number two. There's a second major overarching issue that comes up in the Tchelis debate. And that is like this. As you pointed out, so in the Ritzin Rebbe's Tchelis, which is still worn by the Breslovers, thanks to Ari Goldman's contribution. So we're not going to totally reject it, but it wasn't so accepted. The Ritzin Rebbe's Tchelis, so the Gedolim at the time didn't really accept it. And the one of the Gedolim who didn't accept it was the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi did not accept the Ritzin Rebbe's conclusion. Now, there are two versions of what exactly Beis Halevi's Taina was on the Ritzin Rebbe's Tchelis. And you need to pay attention because the nafkamina of the two versions will be whether his Taina against the Ritzin Tchelis should apply to the Murex. Version number one is brought down by the Ritzin Rebbe himself in his Sefer. And I'll just emphasize, he says that a correspondent conveyed this b'shem the Beis Halevi. He brings that in his Sefer, I think it's called Eina Tchelis, that the Beis Halevi didn't accept his Tchelis based on the following points. That in light of the fact that we know that the Chilazon was lost for hundreds and hundreds of years, so whatever the Chilazon is, it must be some type of species that kind of fell off the face of the earth. It's got to be a species that has not been used as a dye and has not been so accessible to the Jews. If it would be some kind of species that's always been around, that people knew about, that was accessible, that was used to produce dyes, so that would be essentially a Mesorah that this is not the Chilazon. If we know for a fact that a certain species was always around, then how on earth did all of Klal Yisrael lose the Chilazon? So if there is such a species like that, we have a Mesorah that's not the Chilazon. So the version number one says that was his tying against the cuttlefish, that the cuttlefish was accessible to in a lot of different bodies of water, and it was used for a dye for a number of years. It's actually Prussian blue, which was used, I think, in the 1700s, in earlier times as a dye. And so version number one is that the Beis Halevi's tying was that we have a Mesorah that the cuttlefish is not the Chilazon, because the fact that it was still available and usable shows to us that it wasn't that which, our precious species that was lost from Klal Yisrael. So that is version number one. Now, if you go with version number one, then it's pretty fair to say that does not apply to the Murex. The Murex is much more rare than the cuttlefish. It's only in the Mediterranean. The science of the Murex was very much lost of how to produce this blue dye until this, magical discovery in the 1980s. We totally forgot how to produce this blue dye from the Murex. And so the first taina of the Beis Halevi would not be a taina on the Murex at all. However, there's a second version of the Beis Halevi, which Rabbi Soloveitchik told me, that he has a direct Mesorah from his father going back to the Beis Halevi as to the second version. And the Rav from YU, so in the Shir Mazircha Avimori, he also says that he has the same Mesorah going back to the Beis Halevi, that there's a second taina that the Beis Halevi brought against the cuttlefish, which is going to apply to the Murex. The Rav Soloveitchik said that his father told him, b'shem Rav Chaim, b'shem the Beis Halevi, that the issue the Beis Halevi had, and it could be both were true, is that the reason we cannot accept the cuttlefish is because we need a Mesorah to reintroduce the Chilazon. If you want to tell me that something is the Chilazon, we need a Mesorah to reintroduce it. We need a positive Mesorah to reintroduce the Chilazon back into the halachic system of Klal Yisrael. And Rav Soloveitchik said that his father, Baron, explained the Beis Halevi's elaborated upon this point as follows. Baron said like this, that when it comes to the whole halachic system, the entire halachic system is predicated on facts. It's predicated on mitzias, what Rav Aaron called mili da'alma of dinei haTorah, the mitzias, the factual reality of dinei haTorah. We have a mitzvah called an esrog. What's the chefs of mitzvah of an esrog? What's an esrog? What's the facts behind this mitzvah? What's the facts behind the five grains? There are a lot of halachas that apply to the five grains. If you're makar on yashan, a lot of different halachas karbanos are totally on the five grains. What's chita? How do we know what chita is? So the answer is, said Rav Aaron, the reason we know what chita is, we know what an esrog is because we have a mesorah. What validates, what tells us the halacha, what tells us the facts behind the halacha is the mesorah. The fact that all of Klal Yisrael throughout the generations knew that the citron is the esrog is how we know that the esrog is the citron. The fact that we know that wheat, barley, spelt rye, and oat are the five grains is why we know that those are the five grains. So Vajik said that someone once tried to argue that oats is not one of the five grains. It doesn't square up with Mamari Chazal. He said that Ramosha of Shlomo Zalman said that we have mesorah, that oats is one of the five grains. It's one of the five grains. So that was Rav Aaron's explanation of the Beis Halevi, that the facts, which are the whole basis, the fundamental basis for all of the halachic system, we know it because the whole corpus of Klal Yisrael throughout the generations knew what wheat was. We know that chita was wheat and barley is saorim, and we know that the esrog is a citron. And so in that vein, what the Beis Halevi was saying was that we lost the chilazon. If you want to now introduce, we have a halacha called chelas. Chelas is totally on the chilazon. What is the chilazon? This is a certain fact, a certain mitzias that we need in order to use the chilas. Well, if you want to reintroduce the chilazon, we need a mesorah to validate this fact in order for the halakhic system to recognize it and for this mitzvah to come back into effect. So that was the second version of the Beis Halevi, that to reintroduce the chilazon into the halakhic system, we need a positive mesorah validating this fact to set up this halakha called chilas. And if that was his taina, that would apply to the murex, because the murex also, at the end of the day, you're trying to reintroduce something, and we need a mesorah to reintroduce the facts into the halachic system. I just want to quickly point out, and I know there are a lot of questions, but just to quickly point out, Shavishik had two additional points that are very important just to finish off this discussion. He himself was most of 2 points onto the Beis Halevi's Nikuda. Point number one, he says, is that he asked his father, we have enough for a minion? We have a minion here? Is everyone, are we good? I'm not planning on going way over. Just want to make sure I just finish the point. Okay, we're good, fine. So we go to 10:02, we're okay. So he says that he asked his father, Urban, he says, I remember exactly where I was when I asked him this question. He gave a shiur on Tchelas, and I asked my father the following question. He said that, okay, so the Beis Halevi says that we're not chayev to wear Tchelas. What if a person does wear Tchelas and it ends up being right? What if the cuttlefish, what if the breast lovers are right? What if the cuttlefish is the chilazon? And the taka right. So would they get schar according to the Beis Halevi? So Rav Salvichik said that his father, Baron, said to him that certainly if a person wears tchelas and they end up being right, they wear this questionable tchelas and end up being correct, they will certainly get schar. All the Beis Halevi was saying is that there's no chiev to wear it. See, one of the big proponents, one of the big arguments of the proponents of the murex is, listen, safek deraisa l'chumra. We have a principle, safek deraisa l'chumra. We have a mitzvah deraisa called chelas. It's at least a safek, you'll admit to us, right? So, safek deraisa l'chumra. Seder Salvechik, the Beis Halevi is saying there is no safek deraisa l'chumra. Because of the fact that there's no mesorah, there's no safek deraisa l'chumra. It's not called the halach safek in that regard. And so there's no chiev. But Rav Aaron had said, although there's no chiev, there certainly is a kiev. Certainly, if a person would guess, so to speak, or would go for the gold, and he's correct, certainly he would get schar if it ends up being correct. So that was the point number one. If he's wrong, okay. Dov was asking what if he's wrong. I don't know. I'm going to 10:02 here. Fine. So what if he's wrong? That's a different point. Fine. But so that is point number one. That was Hosafa number one. And if he's right, he gets schar. Off the cuff, if he's wrong, if he does it correctly, he won't get too messed over. If he does it correctly. It means that there's a machlokas how many strings to die correctly. I don't have time to do this. I apologize. We'll hack it out afterwards. So that's point number one. Point number two, which Shafetchik said, was as follows. He just added something which I think Daniel Fried will appreciate. So I need to point this out, is as follows. He said that Shafetchik feels, and he had a very beautiful riot to this, but I don't have time to get into it. He feels that when the Beis Halevi says that you need a mesorah to validate the facts of the Torah, that we can't reintroduce the chilazon without a mesorah. So he said that certainly if we could know bevados 100% through our reading of Chazal, what the chilazon was, the Beis HaLevi would allow for us to reintroduce the Chilazon. If it was clear as day, no shaila in the world that the Murex or whatever species you want to say, a lion, is the Chilazon, you know, after reading all the Mamre Chazal, we'll come to that conclusion, and there's no shaila, there's no debate, certainly the Beis HaLevi would allow for us to reintroduce the Chilazon into the Mesorah. That's what he feels, even based on certain Gemaras. But the point of the Beis HaLevi is once there's a Safek, once it's not clear how to read the Chazal, so we can debate back and forth about the various issues, that's where the Beis HaLevi kicks in and says that it's not subject to the Chumrah. There's no Chiyuv here. Without a Mesorah, we don't have to start being Goris. We don't have to start, you know, taking into account these possibilities, these speculations. It doesn't have a lachic significance. It doesn't register la halacha. And Rav Soloveitchik himself added, he feels that although he feels that it's very reasonable that the Murex is the Chilazon, he said that there are very good arguments that it is the Chilazon, he feels that it's still not a Vadai, it's not 100%. And so he feels that the Beis HaLevi still is applicable to the Murex. Despite the fact that he does feel that there are very good arguments that the Murex is the Chilazon, he feels that it's not 100%. He feels that the Beis HaLevi does still apply. And therefore, he feels that there's no Chiyuv to wear it nowadays. I'll just point out one. He made a very sharp point. One additional point, or Soloveitchik said, he said that I was asking him, so like, why don't the Gedolim wear it? You know, based on Ryan's point, if it gets hard for wearing it, so why don't the Gedolim wear it? So it gets into Dov's Kash a little bit about if there's anything to lose. But one of the points he made to me, Soloveitchik said like this. He said a very sharp point. He said that it's a very big danger to the Mesorah if all of Klal Yisrael would wear it. He says, imagine if, you know, in the times of the Radzina Rebbe, if everyone just accepted it, everyone started wearing the Tchelis, and then all of a sudden, Rav Herzog comes along and he disproves it, you know, and everyone except the Breslovers don't wear it anymore, you know, except his disprove. It's a pretty strong argument. So what would that do for the Mesorah? He said, if all of Klal Yisrael started wearing it, and then they found out that, like, the Gedolim were wrong, so to speak, and, like, we shouldn't have worn it. Everyone would feel disgusting. They feel terrible. It would terribly damage the Mesorah. So, and Rav Yashar brings this up. Rav Yashar, I put on the extra credit section, Mar Mekomos, the Kovash Shuvas. Rav Yashar brings this point up. He says that many years ago, a big tumult was made by one of the Gedolim about reintroducing Tchelos, and it was disproven. You know, so what are we going to say about the Murex? The same thing's going to happen, perhaps. So Rav Soloveitchik said, he said that the safety mechanism for all the pro-Tchelos camp is the anti-Tchelos camp. He said that the pro-Tchelos people have to be thankful to the fact that there's an anti-Tchelos camp because it's a safeguard against this potential pitfall to the Mesorah. The very fact that many people are arguing against it is allowing for the pro-Tchelos people to get around this issue. And even if it turns out that it's wrong, so there'll be no damage to the Mesorah because look, the Gedolim, you know, certain Gedolim said not to do it. You know, some Gedolim say, you know, there's great people that say to do it, but certain Gedolim say not to do it. There won't be this damage to the Mesorah because of the fact that not everyone does it. So he said that the pro-Tchelos people need to be thankful to the anti-Tchelos people for avoiding this issue. So with that, we finish the discussion of Tchelos and Mitzvah next week. We're going to finish up Malaches Tzad. Okay, Shkayach. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Sorry for going overboard. I thought it was Kedai.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.
Daniel, I'm going to talk on the phone. I just have to answer for a minion.
Yeah, no problem.
Maybe like 10:15, can I call you? Or?
So I'm actually doing one thing, but then maybe I'll call you if it's not too late.
Okay, that's fine. Call me. I'll have my phone on.
Yeah. Okay. No problem.
Great seeing you.
You too.